Hey, good morning, Holland Zeeland. Welcome to WHTC Money Matters with your host, Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Hey, today's show is going to be pre-recorded. It is April 12th. Kerry and I are just coming back from vacation, spring break. Hopefully we're in someplace warm coming back, and hopefully it's warm here because we've had 2 weeks of baseball.
2 weeks, yeah. 2 weeks of baseball.
Tigers, March 31st is their opening day. So recording the show.
That's hard to believe, March 31st. And, you know, we're sitting here the end of February recording this, and that's 4 weeks away. You think they're going to have the snow off the field?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that they could just do all kinds of things at Tiger Stadium. The matter is, because there's going to be snow off the stadium, off the seats. But hey, it's a pre-recorded show, no call-ins today, so we have a couple things. We'll go through questions. We have no market update. Our show today is going to be talking about beneficiaries, things you need to know about naming your beneficiaries. And so, Kerry, we've got questions. We have the ability for you to ask us questions. The easiest thing is for you to just call us on the phone, and we'll pick up, we'll answer your questions, or we'll call you back that day. Otherwise, if you want to call our office at 616-931-1223, get extension 4, 616-931-1223, extension 4. Or if you still have a landline, our toll-free number is 866-512-7164.
Yeah, and, you know, if you miss a radio broadcast in the past, you know, or you somebody else you want to recommend listen to it, you know, go to the WHTC website and click on WHTC Listen to the Last Week's Show, which is on there, which is a great way to listen to past shows.
Yeah, absolutely. They podcast it every week. It's there. You know, you can go to our website, which is www.cooleygodfrey.com. That's KOELEGODFREY.com. So we have a great website. And so questions. Here we go. I will read the first question because I think it's the shortest question.
Okay. So I always like that.
I would like to start a Roth account for my grandkids instead of buying them presents for birthdays, Christmas, etc. But how much can I put each year into their Roth IRA?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah. You know, a Roth IRA can be started by anybody. Money can be put in. But there's one little note that here the grandkids need to have earned income throughout the year. So if that grandchild has earned income of $1,000, you can put up to $1,000. If that grandchild has an income of $8,000, the maximum you can put into the Roth is $5,500 per year. So it's $5,500 max per year or maximum earnings on the W-2.
Right. And some kids, you know, make $500. Well, you could put $500 in. I mean, you know, we have plenty of grandparents that we have convinced to put money in their grandkids' Roth.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of kids are receiving money from the grandparents. Well, and plenty of kids are receiving money from their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do that with my boys. I make sure they get an income, and I put in the max that I can for them per year. Now, you do have a deadline to meet. The deadline is April 15, or this year it's April 18 because of the holiday and the weekend. So money into the Roth for last year, you have up until April 15 of each year, or in this year, the 18th, to still put money in for last year. And what that does, that leaves all of 2014 open to put money in for the grandchild in this example. So, you know, the other thing that could happen is start a Roth conversion. Well, in this case, nah, I'm not even going to go there. So that just goofed people up. But yeah, definitely you can put money into the Roth IRA based on the W-2 earnings of that child.
And we're, you know, assuming that when we say grandkids, kids, they're little children. Well, you know, we have people who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s that have children in their 50s, grandchildren in their 50s. Grandchildren in their 20s or 30s. So, you know, we're talking about people who have incomes that one, didn't know about a Roth, or two, have never contributed to one, even though they knew about it. So this gives Grandpa and Grandma a chance to, you know, sit the 26-year-old down now that has a pretty serious job and say, you know, we'll put money into your account. Maybe it's a match situation. You put in 50, we'll put in 50, which is 100% return for the grandkids. It's just an opportunity for the parents or grandparents, either one, to have a great influence on somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
Transfer of wealth.
Yep. Good answer here. Here's the second question. It's a little bit longer than the first one. We are thinking of retiring and trying to do a budget for after we retire and thinking it will go down. Are there any expenses we have forgotten to include on our budget sheet?
Well, you could. I mean, we have a pretty nice budget sheet, and for our listeners out there today, it's a pre-recorded show, but if you want to call our office again at 616-931-1223 extension 4, Janet will either send you an Excel spreadsheet that has a very elaborate budget sheet that you just got to fill in. It calculates it automatically.
Or it's available through our website,
too. It's available for our website, or we'll put it in the mail to you.
Yeah, the website, just to let listeners know, is www.cooley, K-O-E-L-E, then Godfrey, G-O-D-F-R-E-Y.com. And, yeah, it's a great budget sheet, but I think one of the misconceptions here with this question is people, a lot of times, when they go into retirement, think their expenses are going to go down. Well, in some cases, some expenses are going to go down. Definitely some will go down. However, there's going to be other expenses that are going to go up. And a couple of them that I can think of, you know, one is definitely travel, taking trips. You'll have more free time to do this, and that's expense involved in that. And then entertainment, you know, goes along with that. You could travel to Branson, Missouri, and take in some shows down there. Well, there's an expense. You need to figure those things in and budget in a travel expense budget, but definitely, you know, it's going to be higher than what it has in the past, while others are going to go down. What are some other costs that could go up, Jack?
Well, healthcare. I mean, healthcare is going to go up. One, if you retire before Medicare, you have to carry your own health insurance. And, of course, Obamacare is here now, so you're going to have to register for some type of healthcare, or you're going to get it from your company because retiree benefits are going to be there. Carrie and I both have wives who are teachers, so we get retiree benefits. So we're going to pay a little bit more than when they worked, but still a very low premium. I tell people if you're going to retire before Medicare, you're probably looking at a minimum of $800 to $1,000 a month in health care premiums. So they're going to go up. Like you mentioned, entertainment trips. It depends on if you're retiring to less of a lifestyle or you're going to try to maintain your lifestyle while you worked. So things that are going to go down are, hopefully you've had your mortgage paid off before you retire. Some people have not.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in this day and age, probably there's more that haven't paid down their mortgage than have paid their mortgage down.
I would agree with that. You know, another one is if you've been traveling to work, possibly your gas prices are going to go down from your commuting expense, so wear and tear on a vehicle, that expense could possibly go down. Another one that may go down, it depends on your unique situation, but you know, sometimes life insurance. A lot of times when people get to that point, they don't have debt, they don't need life insurance, so they don't have that premium payment out there. But before you give up any life insurance, you need to review that with your agent to figure out what is the best avenue to go. So I'm not saying just drop life insurance. It needs to fit for your unique ways that you have set up for you, and it may be a good idea to drop it, may not. But that's another one that people sometimes, other things, some family expenses may go down, but because you only have two people at home, the kids are all out of the house, but usually that's been happening for a while. So, and the other thing, Jack, you mentioned health care, you know, between if you retire at age 60, 61, and you're not full retirement of 65 or 66, your health care costs are going to come all out of your own pocket. So you need to bridge that gap between 60 or when you retire and full retirement of 66, and that expense is going to come out of your pocket also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can do COBRA for 18 months. I think that's the rule now, 18 months, maybe 2 years. I think you can get it from your insurance company. But, you know, people used COBRA before because it would guarantee you had health coverage. Now, because they're no longer able to have pre-existing conditions, I think more people are going to do less COBRA and more Obamacare stuff. So another thing, let's go back to life insurance a second. You know, what people forget about is most people today who are retiring, a husband and wife both worked. How many years, we don't know, but probably still with the people who are 66 today, retiring, 62 retiring today, mom didn't work until maybe 30 or 40 years old, maybe 45. So she has less of a Social Security income, but irregardless, she has Social Security income.
Mm-hmm.
Dad usually dies first. So let's just say Dad's getting $2,000 a month. Mom, her Social Security check's maybe $1,000. Dad dies first. That $1,000 of hers is going to go away.
Yeah, she'll get the higher amount.
She'll get the higher amount, but that $1,000 a month is going away, $250 a week.
Now,
that's a big amount.
Are expenses going to drop by $1,000 a month?
No.
Yeah, I would agree.
No? I mean, that's so... You have to think about maybe life insurance. If you bought it a long time ago, it's term, 30-year term, don't cancel it. Review your whole life. Maybe you can get it cheaper, but sometimes it's you need to keep that just in case Dad dies first and you haven't saved much throughout the years. So it's something to think about.
Oh, definitely. Third question. Here's the last question that's been written in by our listeners. And again, thank you for writing these in. I'm getting real worried about my parents. They are retired and they were living off the interest they were making with their investments and with the interest rates at banks. They're quite low right now. They're starting to dip into the principal. Any suggestions?
Well, if they're only getting interest off a bank, their principal's going away pretty doggone quick.
Well, yeah, and let's just be generous here right now. If they put $100,000 in a CD at the bank for 1 year to maybe 3 years, you're going to get 1%, maybe 1.5%, but 1% still being pretty generous. So that's $1,000 on that $100,000. That's not very much.
No, you're going to drain that. Let's just say you're stripping off $500 a month off of that CD. That's $6,000 a year. Six into 100 is, I don't even know that math. I don't know, 14 months, 15 months. You know, no, that's not correct. What did I say? 500 times, 500 times, oh, $6,000 a year. That's what that is.
Yep,
500 a month, $6,000 a year.
$6,000 a year.
Yeah.
So if you take the six and go into the 100,000, you'll figure out how many months this will last.
Yeah, 13, 14 months. So that's or years I'm talking about, years. Sorry, you got some interest on that, but that's not very long. So you need to find some alternatives for that interest. That would be one. Maybe your parents need to find some part-time jobs if they're able to do that. You know, there's a lot of retirees who are still working. You know, I see a lot of retirees mm-hmm. in their 70s, 80s still working part-time, making extra $200-$300 a week. So,
yep. And some people have to work because they need the extra income.
Yeah.
And there's others out there that work because they enjoy it. They're connected with family and friends. They're connected with other, you know, employees that they work with, just the social part of it, the energy part of it, the health part of it, the mental health. Those are all important things to think about, too, because I know both you and I, for me just to go home and sit and do nothing, I would go nuts. I need to be active. I need to be doing something, keeping my brain sharp.
Yeah, and people retire. You can't travel every day. I guess you can, but the customers we have, you know, they're gone a month. They want to be back home. They like their own bed. I mean, so it's, and you can't shop every day, and you can't read a book all day. Well, I guess you can, but most people still want to be doing something. And, you know, a lot of people are volunteering, which is awesome. But, you know, I would love to hear people write in or call us about being retired and busy. Now,
yeah.
A lot of people say they're busy, but what are they doing?
Yeah,
that would
exactly.
Be really interesting.
Well, and the question goes on to ask is, are there any suggestions? Are there anything that his parents can do to make more income? And there are. There's a lot of options, but the one thing we have to say is that these options don't fit everybody.
No.
And, you know, there's what we call business development, you know, investments, which are secured notes, and you're looking that if money's put into those, you're getting 6 to 7%. However, there's a certain amount of risk involved. The money is not as liquid, and it's tied up for a period of time. So there's always give and take to this. So
yep, absolutely.
Listeners, thanks you know, for your questions that you've written in. We're going to take a short break here. We're going to be right back. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Carrie Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Our show today is we're going to be talking about beneficiaries. But you need to know this show is being taped for April the 12th. Carrie and I are on spring break. We're someplace warm. And we're not going to come back until...
The snow's gone.
The snow's gone. Well, hopefully it's gone on April 12th. But so a tape show. Our show's going to be on beneficiaries. We spend a lot of time with clients on beneficiaries, to make beneficiaries viable, understandable. Do you understand where you place them? Do they need beneficiaries? One of the things, and you have to know what trumps what, and if you have a beneficiary form, and one of the things that people forget, on retirement account, your will, your trust, has no jurisdiction over beneficiary designations, and we need to be careful to go over that. So your will does not trump beneficiary destinations for or designations for your accounts. So let's talk about 401ks, IRAs, insurance policies, annuities, where there's actually a beneficiary, brokerage accounts, TOD, transfer on death. Those documents trump, I want $50 to go here. I want $100 here. I want 10% left there. Doesn't count.
No, exactly.
Doesn't count.
Exactly. Well, another thing to remember, you know, the Supreme Court has agreed, too, that beneficiaries in this case, you know, trump the will. And, for example, you need to review these choices that are on your, let's say, your 401k plan, because if you get a divorce and all of a sudden you have changed the will but forgot to change the beneficiary on your IRA or 401k account or on your annuities or your any of your TOD accounts, they're going to end up going to your ex in this case if you've forgotten to change it. So it's very, very important that if there's a major life event, new children in the family, a divorce situation, a death of one of the spouses, that you go back and review your beneficiaries on every one of your accounts. That means life insurance, that is 401k plans, that is any type of retirement account, IRAs, Roth IRAs. You need to review this on take extra care and review it on a regular basis.
No, I just had a situation this week where a person had about $1.5 million, 86 years old, went over to his house to kind of help him after his wife died. And looking over, he'd got some forms from some other companies. He said, "Yeah, can you help me with this?" I said, "Sure, I'd be glad to take a look at it." So his wife had died. They had the death certificate. He had three forms there. One form was to take his wife's RMD, which she had to take this year because she died this year, 2014. She had to take her RMD first. They had paperwork saying we're going to transfer in kind from the wife's IRA to his. That was perfect. I said, that's great. And it listed the account number we're transferring the in kind assets to. However, his account hadn't been set up yet. It had an account number. And all the other brokerage firm did was send him a signature page.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "John, where is the beneficiaries?" "I don't know." So I said, "Let's just call." So we called the firm. They're over there on the other side of town. When I say other side of town, other side of Grand Rapids, which is probably a 20-mile trip. And I said to the person who answered, and of course he gave me permission to talk and help. And I said, "Will you send one of your people over to help John fill out the forms and get this set up?" "No, he'd have to come into the office." "Well, John doesn't drive anymore." So, you know, Carrie and I, we make house calls on a regular basis.
We do, and it's fun.
And it's fun, and we have 22 people. We have 22 states where we are investors at, and we travel to those states. Believe it or not, we travel there, and we help people out. So it's a good thing. So if he would have just signed this document, there would have been no beneficiaries on his account. No beneficiaries. He didn't know that.
Well, and here's the thing. And if beneficiary documents are left blank, guess who gets to decide where that money goes? That ends up...
probate court.
Yeah, that goes through the probate court, and it can be kind of a mess. I mean, there's situations where, let's say a divorce happens, the wife or one of the spouses gives up the right of the pension plan in the divorce decree, but it never gets changed in the pension plan. Guess what? The divorce decree, so what? It's still who's ever written down there yet on that pension.
Right. I mean, there's so much complication. Not complication. This is easy if you get it. I mean, we work with it every day. We usually have a couple people die every month, you know, from our customer base because we have a older customer base. So we're used to handling decedent IRAs, stepping up to the plate to help people understand the process, RMDs that you need to take from the deceased spouse. You know, one of the things that you need to make sure is, you know, retirement accounts are kind of quirky, and they have a little bit different leeway for inheritance if you're a spouse versus if you're a child. So if you're a spouse, you have a couple different options when you inherit your spouse's IRA. One, typically, I'd say 95% of the time, the spouse transfers it to the other spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically goes to the other spouse, provided the spouse is the primary beneficiary, which is, that's okay. Now, here's a couple options you need to think about. What happens when that spouse is under 60?
And
under 59 and a half, to be exact.
And you're probably thinking, need some income off of this money.
Yep.
So if it moves from an IRA to her IRA, you've closed the door on an option. What is that option?
Well, the option is, if she now needs money, just say she, because guys typically die first. If she needs money out of now dad, who'd passed away, into her IRA, she's got to pay taxes and penalty.
Yep.
So the strategy,
because she's under 60.
Because she's under 59 and a half. So we need to now say, okay, so we meet with Mary, and we say, Mary, we have some options here. You need to provide us, we're not going to move this IRA yet out of your husband who had passed away, but we need to know, how are you going to live with him being gone? Your Social Security is going to be put aside, because you're going to take your husband's Social Security because it's higher.
Mm-hmm.
So now we eliminated your Social Security. Well, we ask her, how much did that provide? Okay, we understand that. But, you know, I can't live with just my IRA and my Social Security.
Or his Social Security.
Yep. If she's under 60, she's not getting Social Security, but he is.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still going to get his at age 60, which is going to be reduced. So you're not getting all of his. You don't have your Social Security start. And if you did get or 62, you'd still be under his.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking it early as a spousal Social Security, not a retirement at 62, which you can do, but it really drops it down. So we have to say, what type of cash flow do you need? Well, then we could put this into a decedent IRA.
Or sometimes called an inherited IRA.
So it's not her IRA anymore, which most people do, but she needs money, taxes and penalty if you take it out before 59 and a half. So we can move some of this money to a decedent IRA, and she can take money out of a decedent IRA. Got to pay taxes, because we're talking about IRA, not
Roth.
But
there's no penalty on this.
But no penalty, no 10% penalty. Mm-hmm. So you have to know the options of what you could do, and then you have to know the options of what you should have done if you are going to leave this to a spouse or kids or whatever. So options you have, but again, if you leave this to your wife, she puts in her IRA, needs money, penalty situation.
Mm-hmm.
Penalty situation.
Yep. Works out well that way. And so, listeners, you have to really think about this, of how you set up your beneficiaries and what you want to accomplish. You need to think through different scenarios and the what if. What if this happens? What if that happens? And because you need a plan for those what ifs, because there's going to be a day and time when likely some of those what-ifs are going to happen. Another thing to think about when we talk about some five things you need to know about naming beneficiaries, we talked about the importance of naming a primary beneficiary. We call these primary, which is usually a spouse. But there's also a place on all these beneficiary forms for a contingent or secondary beneficiary. And we do encourage our clients to list secondary beneficiaries, because a lot of times, using a husband-wife situation, if my spouse is on as beneficiary and she dies first, well, it'll go to my contingents, but if I don't have any contingents listed, guess what? It goes through probate. So there's an important factor that you need to look at. Okay, if both my first beneficiaries are gone, who's going to be my secondary? Who's my backup? What's my backup plan for this? It could be children. It could be grandchildren. And I'll give a good example of one way that my parents have done that on their IRAs, and my brother and I were their primary beneficiaries. last year, year and a half ago probably now, we talked to my parents and said, Mom and Dad, you know, Carl and I, my brother, we don't need this money in the IRA. So we'd like to, you know, put this idea in front of you where instead of primary beneficiaries being Carl and I, we put the grandchildren as the primary beneficiaries. But that still also brought up the question of who are the secondary beneficiaries in this case? Or if one of those beneficiaries or one of the grandchildren pass away, how do you want that money? Do you want the money to stay with that family and the grandchildren? Or do you now want, let's say there's five grandchildren and one passes away, do you want it split the same five ways, or do you want it split now four ways? So there's a lot of thinking that goes into this, and it's very, very important to list secondary or contingent beneficiaries.
Oh, yeah, contingent. You know, what we do for young couples just recently married, and we had my son's best friend get married who is a customer, and he's had his parents on. He's on vacation right now, so if he would happen to die prematurely on vacation, his parents are still the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have him sign it at the wedding. No, so, but he did fly away to a foreign country. Is it going to happen? You know, most likely not, and, you know, whatever the odds are. But so, you know, we need to make sure that when he comes back, you know, newly married, no kids, no previous marriage. So right now his parents are still the beneficiaries. So we need to name his wife as the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And then on his IRAs, name his dad and mom 50-50 contingent.
Mm-hmm.
For hers, the same thing. The husband would be the primary, and then maybe her parents are 50-50 as contingent. Or if the parents have a lot of money, we'll make one of her brothers or sisters, or if she has two brothers, both of them 50-50 contingent.
Well, there is a possibility. Let's go back to, say, they're gone on vacation and he dies. And his parents are the primary beneficiaries. He's married now. His parents could disinherit and pass that to his spouse.
Right. Yep. They could forego taking it. They could mm-hmm. forego taking it. So, you know, there are some options there. You just need to be aware of it. So, you know, our show today is we're talking about beneficiaries. We're talking about things you need to know in naming beneficiaries. You know, there's just a right way and a wrong way. It's a strategy. It's, you know, people, we come back from break. I'll talk to you about a beneficiary which blew up in an annuity which we had this past year in 2013. I'll review that with you. Carrie's got some ideas as well. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters right now. We're going to take a break and we're back for the last segment.
Welcome back, listeners. You've been listening to WHTC Money Matters. We're on our last session here, and this is one of your hosts, Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. We're a team of Cooley Godfrey in downtown Zeeland. Been there 20 years, a long time. We're talking about beneficiaries. It's a pre-recorded show. It's for April 12th, so you're listening to Kerry and I talk here at the end of February. We're pre-recording this show. And we're talking about beneficiaries. I'll talk about a situation now which actually happened in 2013. So we thought that we had everything of Dad's accounts, IRAs, non-qualified accounts, trust accounts and non-qualified. Mom had an IRA. Dad had an IRA. Dad had one annuity with us. Mom had none. So we're sitting around the table, and one person who came up and said, well, you know, we thought you had everything, but you didn't. Dad had an IRA. I got an annuity. And I go, oh, okay, well, you know, we can help you with that, which I wasn't the broker on it, but somebody else did it. And I go, what's the problem? Well, Dad had a son-in-law. We had a daughter, and of course, there was five kids total. One of the daughters was married to a licensed financial planner and had sold Dad an annuity, well, which is fine. And I said, you know, that's good, okay, but what's the problem? Well, Dad had only listed one child as the beneficiary on this account. One child.
Just one. And how many kids?
Five kids.
Five kids, okay.
So this was a $350,000 annuity, which he took out a long time ago. Only, and the wife didn't need the money, so that's, well, why, and that's why the kids are on there.
It was before your time.
Yep. So $350,000. The only beneficiary was one child, the daughter. This was the husband, of course, was in the business, now not in the business. And so here's what happens. And she was gracious. She said, you know, Dad wanted this money to go to all five of us, 20% apiece. I go, okay, but you don't understand now the ramifications of picking this, you being the only option. Well, why is that? You know, I'll just liquidate it, and we'll take the cash, and I'll divvy it up. Well, that's really nice. She being the only beneficiary is, guess who gets the 1099 off of this?
Ouch.
She does.
She does, yeah.
So we're talking $350,000, plus her and her husband were successful. It drove them to the top tax bracket, which is 39%. The other four siblings were in the 15% tax bracket. So if they would have inherited Dad's money, 20% apiece times 5, 100%, they would have paid tax if they took it all out, which they didn't need to, but this way, the only way to get disbursements from the one sibling. So the daughter took it out and paid 39% plus state tax. The other siblings, if the beneficiaries would have been right, they would have taken out, they would have stayed within the 15% tax
bracket. Same tax bracket, yeah.
Same tax bracket.
Saving 30%.
More than half.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than half of what happened here. So, unintended consequences. They knew that they had set it up incorrectly. The unintended consequences are the other siblings received a lot less money because of wrongful due diligence, wrongful filling out the forms.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't, you know, the daughter there, the oldest daughter, felt really bad that this happened. But one, Dad didn't know what he was signing. Dad didn't know the consequences. So it really cost them, you know, about 30-some percent of what they got, which is maybe 29%.
So, listeners, you know, as you can see from some of our examples, there's some quirky things out there. And, you know, that brings us to an idea that I want to share with you, you know, involving IRAs and 401ks. And there is advantages. You know, I talked about skipping my brother and I on my parents' IRA and moving it to the grandkids. But there are some advantages, you know, to naming a spouse over a child. You know, for example, the partner, the spouse, can roll over such accounts into their name, thus, if they don't need the money, thus postponing distributions and taxes till age 70. But again, as Jack mentioned, if the spouse needs the income, it may be better to be a beneficiary IRA. But now, if the kids, you know, instead of having, you know, the spouse there and the kids inherit, the kids need to start taking distribution. And that may be a downside in some cases, and they end up paying tax on them, you know, the year after the death. You know, so another thing is also avoid listing your estate as the beneficiary in most cases, not all cases. There is some cases you want to list the estate because, you know, by law, heirs then must empty the account if the estate is there. As beneficiary, the heirs have to empty the IRA account within 5 years, pay the taxes on it, and it could cost them, you know, investment gains. It could bump them in, as you just mentioned, Jack, into a higher tax bracket. So there's pros and cons, and what works for one family isn't necessarily going to work for the other family. So it's very important. But now, what are some cases where the beneficiary should be the estate, should be the trust or the will?
Well, I mean, it's you know, one of those things that, you know, here's what we say. If you have a child who is not responsible for money, you might want to say, okay, the trust is going to be the beneficiary, and the trust is going to dictate to the child at certain ages you're going to be able to receive this money, triggering points like marriages, you could get more money. Otherwise, it's a payout. It's a payout over X number of years, and typically it's 5. That's one strategy. Or if you have a disabled child who would not benefit from receiving this money because the money would go back to the state automatically to pay for that person's care. So, again, a child who is not competent to handle financial things, even though old enough, smart enough, just couldn't handle it because they would rather spend in other areas, or a child who is unable to fend for themselves in maybe an institution or whatever. So those are two things. The other thing is, you know, if you're going to inherit an IRA as a child or a grandchild, the thing how this works is everybody, so, you know, I have five kids. If my five kids inherit my money, my spouse has already died, I'm the last guy. Each kids, our kids range from 38 to 26. Each one of those five kids are going to take this decedent IRA based on their ages, unique ages. So my 38-year-old would have to take more out than my 26-year-old. And you can stretch this IRA over multiple lives. So, you know, we have a daughter that's married, Long Island. She could then say, well, my primary beneficiary on this inherited IRA from dad is my husband. She dies first based on her age. Husband gets it still based on her age. Husband dies, two kids get it still based on her age. So once you get a decedent IRA, it's based on that child who inherits it, their age. Not complicated, but you get to stretch it out over multiple lives, which is if you just take the income off of this, we're maybe talking 20, 30, 40, 50 years of getting a monthly check.
And that can add up to be a lot of money over that period of time.
Huge, huge. But you need to know the rules. First thing that people typically do, and again, you're listening to a recorded show, we're talking about beneficiaries, on a decedent IRA, most people just said, send me the check. And I go, wait a minute here.
Yeah.
Let's go through this first. Do you need the money? No, I just want it.
Okay.
I go, well, there's some disadvantages. One, if it's an IRA, you got to pay tax on it.
Yeah.
Could drive you to another tax bracket. All kinds of things that in the heat of the night of being able to get money, people forget.
Well, and, you know, there's some cases here, too, where let's say the secondary beneficiary are the children, and they're minor children. They're under 18. And this is where you need to be careful with naming minor children, because if you don't have a trust in the child's name to manage this money of a child that's under 18, this money would go to probate court. So what you need to be careful of when naming children that are 18 and under is making sure that you take a little time with your attorney and set up that this money will go into a trust for the children. And that way you can avoid probate and you can avoid a lot of taxes and you can avoid a lot of problems with this and having it being tied up in probate, because probate is a situation where it usually gets through, but it takes time. And I've seen cases that can take, you know, 6 months, a year. I've even seen some go as long as 2 years. And that's just, the money's tied up, you can't do anything.
No, but then, you know, sometimes we have already set up these inherited IRAs. You know, I have one example where children 14 and 16 inherited not only each of these girls inherited 20%, 40 total, two girls inherited 20% of grandpa's IRAs and Roths. We've now grown the decedent IRAs, which is in their name now, 30% over the last 3 years. They are taking money out of grandpa's decedent IRAs, and grandpa's wishes were, we need to fund their Roth account. So, you know, these kids were 14 and 16, now they're 19 and 21. They have somewhere around $35,000 in their Roth accounts that grandpa's funded, and grandpa's counts up.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of these, setting up the beneficiaries correctly, you know, we encourage wealthy people who are in their 70s, 80s, 90s to begin to think about, one, doing it while they're on the earth, giving stuff to their grandchildren and children, taking money out of their estate, lowering their estate problems if they have one, and being able to build family wealth. So naming beneficiaries and strategy is all kind of convoluted together, but you need to have the forethought of making sure you know the rules first.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you have to remember that changing beneficiaries is pretty easy.
Not hard, signing your name.
Exactly. And, you know, if that's at the bottom of your to-do list, you move that to the top, and if you still aren't going to do it, you could have your attorney do it, but the attorney's going to charge a fee, you know, by the hour to contact the institutions and get beneficiaries changed and updated. But you just need to take a little time. You can call up your financial institution, your bank, your investment institution, and just ask them, say, hey, I need to update my beneficiaries, or I'd like to add beneficiaries. Could you send me the forms? And just have them send them to you. You can fill them in and send them back, but make sure, you know, that you take copies of everything, that you keep a master list, a master binder with all this information in, and send in, you know, the originals to the institution. And make sure that you get a confirmation from the institution of who the beneficiaries are and who you've changed them to is also very important.
And, you know, something to think about here, too, is when you inherit these as a beneficiary, you need to say, because, you know, we'll have five people around the table, 20% apiece. Person number one wants to take the cash. I go, well, we'll send you the cash. Person number two needs some cash. So we'll lay the assets out from Dad's IRA, and then we'll start to divvy stuff up. Person three, four, and five, they want Dad's mutual funds, stocks, annuities left to them. They want it in kind. One wants all cash, so we'll liquidate enough off everything and give them the cash. Number two wants half cash, half in kind. So typically we always say, we're going to transfer these assets to your beneficiary in kind with these mutual funds, these stocks, these annuities, etc. So you get the opportunity to name your beneficiaries and then make sure they get educated. That's what we talk about, is make sure they get educated when they are beneficiaries, to learn what that means.
Yeah.
And to learn what the responsibility is.
And we've been talking about financial institutions, your investments. Now, let's say that you have other special items in the house. Jewelry, rings, cottage, a second home, guns, pianos, whatever it may be. Those are things that should be listed in your will.
Right.
That who gets what. Some people have even gone as far as, you know, putting it on a video and sharing on that video of who gets what. So there's actually a video recording and besides the will. So those are just good things to remember, little things to do. They do take a little time, but we can help. And listeners, we want to remember our show next week is going to be a guide to the market. So we're going to take a review of where the market has gone the first quarter of this year and give you an update and what to expect looking forward. So listeners, thanks for listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll see you live next week.